Thank you. As Marianne mentioned, I'm not Jamie Love, and really couldn't hope to do justice to his experience and expertise. And I have no idea how he planned to provide a comprehensive overview on all of IP and trade agreements in 10 minutes. So since I come at this from more of a clinical perspective, as a resident who sees patients clinically, the focus of my 10-minute presentation is going to be on the IP provisions or controversies affecting access to medicines, and hope to sort of build on some of the issues that Jennifer in particular has just described. So I have no relevant relationships to disclose. The learning objectives for this this presentation will be to focus sort of on some of the IP controversies, like I said, that affect access to medicines in the new generation of trade agreement negotiations. And based on kind of the earlier panels today, I hope that there will be a robust discussion. So as has been mentioned by a couple speakers now, there are quite a few negotiations sort of ongoing, and I'll generally refer to all of these as the new generation of trade agreement negotiations. As was previously mentioned, the TPP negotiations came to a conclusion at the beginning of October, and we're now sort of anticipating sort of the push by the Obama administration to get this agreement approved. There's also the TTIP, which is the US and EU. The 11th round of these negotiations was held a couple weeks ago in Miami, and an agreement is anticipated by the end of next year currently. There is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which includes ASEAN plus six states that ASEAN has existing free trade agreements with. There's the Trade and Services Agreement, and there's Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, which includes Canada and the EU. I group all of these agreements together in an effort to sort of highlight some of the similarities, because these negotiations occur outside of existing World Trade Organization sort of structures, and the purported goal of these negotiations, at least according to the USTR, seems to be to sort of create a new model for all future trade agreements, and de facto then to create a new global governance framework for trade. So I'd be remiss without, of course, prefacing everything I'm about to say with a remark about the lack of transparency in these negotiations. So one of the big problems, the barriers to discussion about these issues, is that negotiating texts and negotiators generally are secretive. And there's really disparate access to negotiating texts that negotiators afforded to industry, which results in a real strategic disadvantage for the public health community in terms of advocacy and engagement on a lot of these issues. But with that, I just wanted to highlight seven sort of current IP controversies that have potential implications for access to medicines. So once again, this is based on sort of leaked texts and speculations that have kind of been in the media or whispered in the halls. These provisions, though, have really potentially devastating consequences for patients and for access to medicines. And while a lot of these issues and a lot of these restrictions are the reality here in the United States on sort of the global scale and sort of with respect to global health, could even further limit access to affordable medicines. So the first sort of issue or set of provisions is evergreening, which is can be kind of broadly defined as indefinite extension of exclusionary rights on patented medical products through prolonged patent terms, pathways for secondary use patents, or just exclusivity terms that extend beyond those initial patents. It's a pretty common practice in the pharmaceutical industry as a means to block generic entry into the market, and that will kind of be a common theme through a lot of these different strategies and provisions, is that this is a means to prevent generics. The second sort of strategy is patent linkage, very similar, or the establishment of a relationship between the market approval process of a generic drug and the patent status of that original product. And it's, once again, a strategy to try to block generics from entering the market. The third is extended data and or market exclusivity, and Jennifer sort of talked about this. a little bit, and or transition periods for products, including biologics. And as was noted, biologics data exclusivity was kind of a key issue in the TPP negotiations. One of the issues, at least, that was rumored to be outstanding at the very end of negotiations and potentially even a deal breaker. The reported compromise was that there is a minimum of 5 years of data exclusivity, which did represent, once again, a compromise for the U.S., as 12 years of data exclusivity is what's currently recognized here in the U.S. Once again, this is all sort of speculative at this point. The fourth set of provisions are restrictions on TRIPS safeguards and flexibilities, including potentially limiting or restricting compulsory licensing and or parallel importation. The compulsory licensing provisions were rumored to be in some of the earlier TPP negotiating texts, although it does not appear that this is a part of the final agreement. But once again, without access to the text, it's pretty difficult to kind of speculate. But there did seem to be some effort to try to raise the bar on, for example, compulsory licensing, although it's unclear how this would function in terms of enforceability. So it's, at this point, once again, very speculative. The three other sort of controversies or sets of provisions, such as some highlights, include restrictions on reference pricing, which has kind of emerged in both TPP and TTIP negotiations. And reference pricing is used by so many health systems, including Australia's Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, New Zealand's Pharmaceutical Management Agency, or PharmAC, the UK's NHS, the VA, actually here in the US, as well as numerous other European health systems. And therapeutic reference pricing is just where there's a common reimbursement level for drugs within a group or class. And there's been a pretty substantial amount of evidence to show that this is a mechanism to reduce sort of overall costs for pharmaceuticals. The next sort of set of provisions is limits on clinical trial data transparency, as distinct from limits on data exclusivity. And the concern here is that trade secret protection, if incorporated into these agreements, could restrict independent analyses of clinical trial data and potentially compromise patient safety by limiting independent analyses and public scrutiny of these data. The final set of provisions is the patenting of diagnostic, therapeutic, and surgical techniques. And this kind of emerged in trade agreement negotiations and could potentially threaten the availability and performance of such techniques by health professionals. There is sort of a model for an exception in 35 U.S.C. 287C that has been incorporated in other trade agreements in the past. And one would hope that this exception is in fact in any agreement kind of moving forward, but is something certainly from the health professions and the public health side that's important to kind of keep an eye on because patenting of these techniques has the potential to really reduce access to sort of care into these techniques. And so with that, thank you, and of course look forward to the discussion. I think one other sort of issue to just mention is the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism that is rumored to be in all of these agreements and has been in numerous agreements previously. Would be the likely way that any of these IP provisions would be enforced. And we've seen with the Eli Lilly case in Canada under NAFTA that these types of cases have the potential to be very expensive, very prolonged, and could serve as a deterrent for governments and/or influence their behavior in a way that once again kind of compromises access to medicines.